Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Mannix from The Vertical, and welcome to The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix, where I check in with some of the top players, coaches, and analysts covering the NBA today. Well, Golden State continues to be the top trending story in the league, so no better time for me to check in with The Vertical's own Michael Lee, who has been a regular at Warriors games this season. I look back at last week's matchup between Golden State and Oklahoma City and get Michael's thoughts on the state of the relationship of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook.
As much as, you know, right now it's sort of been billed as like this, you know, they hate each other or they don't like each other. You spent 8 years with somebody, you connect in a lot of ways, and I think it probably hurts them both that the relationship will never be the same.
All that and more coming up next on The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. Well, welcome back. Another episode, Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix. We are broadcasting today from the Verizon Center, Washington, D.C. Wizards, Houston Rockets about to take the court in a few hours. Joining me here, the Vertical's own Mr. Michael Lee, who is our Kevin Durant Warriors whisperer this last couple of weeks. How many trips on that quick flight from D.C. to Golden State have you made?
It's been three so far, which not too bad. I mean, there are worse cities you could have to fly to. You know, going to San Francisco is not a place that you dread going to, but it is rough when you have to hop in and hop right out, and it's a 6-7 hour flight, so it's not the most pleasant trip.
You know, you've covered the Warriors in the past, including the last couple of years when the coverage of them has been intense. How would you describe the coverage of the Warriors this season?
It doesn't feel all that much different, honestly. I mean, there are more guys covering the team, but it feels like they kind of have it on autopilot in terms of how they deal with the media and how you know, access is provided. And they got a bunch of good guys, so it's not like if you ever need to talk to somebody, it's going to be a challenge, it's going to be difficult. So it sort of feels almost the same. It's just that now there's another person there. You know, in the past, you know, everyone was kind of swarming around Steph. And I think Clay was glad that he didn't have to deal with it. And I think now you add Durant to the equations, Clay can even hide out a little bit more. You know, and then you got Draymond, who's just, you know, anybody that has a mic in front of him, he's going to give you something good. So I think that in a lot of ways it sort of feels the same. It's just that there's another huge piece there now. And that's something that I think they're all getting a little bit adjusted to, is that, you know, it's not just one guy. It's not Steph's show. It's not Steph and Clay's show. It's four guys now that people care about.
All right, a couple of things I want to get to with the Warriors, but I want to start with what we saw last Thursday with the first matchup between Durant and Russell Westbrook, the first of several this season. I'll tell you what, Mike, watching on TV, I was surprised at just how frosty the reception was between Durant and his former teammates. We were all kind of locked in on what we might see between Durant and Russell. But before the game, I didn't see any pregame handshakes between Durant and his ex-teammates. After the game, it was Royal Ivy who's the only one I saw going up to Durant. What did you make of the interaction between Durant and the Thunder?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was unique. You know, I happened to be walking by the chapel right before pregame, and I saw Russell Westbrook walk in. And I know that Kevin is typically always goes to chapel. So I decided to stick around for a little bit just to see if he was going to go in after he shot, because he ended up ending his shooting routine, and then he walked right past the chapel, and there's like, oh, it's back there, and he walked in. And I was like, oh, because this would be the first time that they've been in the same room, really, since he decided to leave to go to Golden State. And so I just sat out there and waited to see what would happen. And, you know, immediately Russell Westbrook walks out with the towel over his head, and right behind him is Kevin Durant with the hoodie over his head. And there was no interaction. There was no conversation. There was no anything. So I even if they, however they feel about it, that had to be awkward for both of them to be in that same space. And I'm sure that, you know, these guys are human. They're not like robots, and they can just, that had to be an emotional time for both of them. Because as much as, you know, right now it's sort of been billed as like this, you know, they hate each other or they don't like each other. You spent 8 years with somebody, you connect in a lot of ways. And I think it probably hurts them both that the relationship will never be the same. And then you go from the chapel to the court to where there was no interaction to, you know, And I guess it never really bled onto the court to where like there was a nasty exchange where like, you know, they were talking smack to each other. Right. It's almost like they act like they didn't exist, which may explain just the level of pain that they have and the fact that their relationship won't be the same anymore.
Do you think there was no interaction in that chapel room? I mean, I know you can't see in there. But
I wasn't in there, but from what, you know, I talked to guys that were in there, and, you know, they said that they acknowledged, they knew that, you know, when Kevin walked in, you know, he saw Russ, Russ saw him, and they knew that they were in there. But there wasn't, like, there was no hugging, there was no handshake, there was nothing. It was just, like, listen to the sermon, listen to, you know, what the pastor had to say, and then just go on your merry way. But I don't think that there was, I mean, that conversation, if it ever happens, when it happens, won't be anytime soon. And I don't know if there's anything that could be said that could make it better. I know that Kevin has tried his best to publicly try to speak to Russ through us, through the media, with a lot of things that he said, especially leading up to that game. And Russ doesn't want to play that game in any way. But I think, you know, that how much, you know, he's affected by that, just by him showing up with that outfit, you know, with the official photographer thing around his clothes and the little cupcake reference he made right after he signed. I mean, you know, he can say all he wants. I don't care. You know, I'm not thinking about him, but he is. And, you know, like I said, you spend that many years, you go through as much as you've gone through. I mean, because people forget now that Russ is like seen as, you know, the people's champ. Everybody loves Russ, triple double machine. But there was a period where he wasn't getting that kind of love. And there was also a period where Kevin was probably his primary advocate publicly, you know, and telling everybody to back off of him and let him figure it out. And I'm sure that, you know, wherever they are now, back then, it had to mean a lot, you know, to have a guy that, you know, was revered publicly and everybody, you know, praised Kevin Durant as being, you know, kind of the golden child. And then he comes out and he tells, you know, Russell, you know, like, hey, this guy can play, you know, this guy can go. And I think it meant a lot to him. And I think they meant a lot to each other. You know, there was a stretch where, you know, you remember when Kevin was sort of had this kind of nasty attitude and he was like kind of, you know, kind of acting hard.
I don't
angry.
Care what you guys think, that kind of stuff. Yeah,
that was all Russ. That was Russ, you know, kind of personality kind of feeding over to him. I think a lot of that, he wishes he had that kind of mentality where he didn't care as much, you know, as Russ, you know, can you know, portray that. And but yeah, it was just unique just to see those guys together. And in a lot of ways, it's a little tough to watch knowing how close, at least us, we thought that they were.
It strikes me that, and Durant has admitted to this, but the biggest mistake he made in this whole process was the text message. Like, you can't, it's like breaking up with a longtime girlfriend. You can't send a text message saying, this is what I'm doing. As painful as it would have been, you've got to make that phone call. You've got to have the conversation. You've got to be a man and kind of, you know, tell your now former teammate that this is what's going on. It seems like Kevin recognizes that too. Like, if he could do one thing differently, I would argue it's probably that.
Yeah, I'm sure he probably would even go further than a phone call. Yeah. You know, if it was just any random teammate, you give them a phone call. But if it's somebody,
mass text the rest of your teammates and call Russell Westbrook.
You call him, but also I think a face to face, you know, or even, you know, something just to give him a heads up, you know, other than a text. That's such a major thing because it affects so much, you know, because Russ had to go through 2 weeks of trade rumors and, you know, speculation about where he's going to wind up. So now it didn't just, you know, affect Kevin. You know, it didn't just say, well, Kevin's, I'm going to Golden State and that's fine. At that point, it's like, well, what's Russ going to do? He's a free agent. Is he going to, you know, and that leads to like another round of stress that Russ had to deal with because of this. You know, when you're about to put a teammate through that and somebody that you've been with for 8 years, you got to take a little more steps than just saying, hey, man, I'm out, and send him a text, and then think that's going to hold over. Because it wasn't just that he lost his teammate. He lost his running mate for 8 years. He lost a guy that he probably considered a friend for 8 years. You know, for a couple of weeks, his whole future was sort of in a limbo as well. So it wasn't just about just basketball there. There was a lot of things that could have been shaken up. If he's, you know, got there and said, man, I don't even want to be here anymore, he winds up getting traded, his life starts over again too. So it was deeper than just one decision, and that's it. It affected a lot of people.
So we're only a few weeks into Kevin's stint with the Warriors, but when you listen to him to what he says, and you're being around him. Do you get the sense that he's happy? I mean, does he have any regrets?
I don't think he has any regrets about the decision. I think that was something he was comfortable with from the beginning. I think what he has regrets about is how he may have handled it, or if he had maybe come out and been a little more gracious or whatever to the people of Oklahoma City to kind of let them know that it wasn't about them necessarily. Because I think that he knew that they were going to be upset. He knew that those fans were going to be angry with him for leaving. It's just like like you said, a relationship. If you love somebody and they leave you, you're going to be angry. But I think there are things he wishes he had done differently in terms of the execution of it. You know, the Players Tribune letter, if it had been a little more about what Oklahoma City meant to him, and just, you know, if it just gone a little more in depth about the difficulty of making the choice. But, you know, from talking to people who've been around him, who've known him, they see a happiness in him with the decision. I just don't think he expected to get that negative backlash. I don't think he expected to have people judge him in that way. I mean, you know, you think about his career. When has he ever had to deal with intense scrutiny or negative backlash? I mean, he did Thunderstruck, and no one ever complained about that movie.
Oh, God, you know? No,
he didn't get panned for doing that movie. It's like, it's never happened. People forget that he did.
Wasn't Shaq and Kazam.
Yeah, like Shaq, yeah, Shaq's been dealing with Kazam slander forever. No one ever brings up Thunderstruck. But again, I just think that, you know, he never had to deal with that level of scrutiny. And then to go from this, be a guy, and to be a guy who, you know, is very aware of what's being said about him and what people think of him. I talked to DJ Augustin for a story last week, and just and he said that, you know, he wasn't surprised that Kevin left because, you know, he thought he could leave. You know, it wasn't like he was just, I'm staying in Oklahoma City, I'm never going. He thought it was a chance, but he didn't think that he was actually going to do it because he knows how Kevin is, and he knows that he's somebody who is really sensitive to how people perceive him. And I think now it's sort of, you know, being a villain when you are the furthest from it. Like, I mean, it's not like he's out there just, you know, elbowing people in the head and just doing all the things to make him a bad guy. He switched teams and all of a sudden became a villain, which that's not, it's a unique position. So I think he's happy though with that. He finally made a choice for himself. You know, he's always been a person that likes to make everybody comfortable, make everybody around him feel good, and make everybody happy. He's like a pleaser in a lot of ways. But he never really did what he wanted. And I think this was a chance where, you know, he put 9 years with that organization, and he was like, okay, now I have a chance to do something for myself. And, you know, he thought that there would be more people allowing him to do that. Instead, he's found that, you know, when you're a power player and you make decisions, people only want the decision that makes them happy, not the one that makes you happy. And but I think overall, from talking to people around him, I think he's very content with the choice he made. But he's not necessarily happy with how it's been received by everybody else.
Mike, hang tight for 1 second, because I've got to tell my listeners about a great way to earn some extra cash driving with Uber. Now, we've all taken some jobs to earn a little bit of extra money. Back in the day, I shoveled so many driveways, I'm still ticked off my parents for not buying me a snowblower. I've got a better way, though, that you can earn some extra money on the side. It's so much easier today, thanks to Uber. Uber's the ultimate side hustle. Driving with Uber is a new way you can earn extra cash whenever you want. It's not just another job. It's a totally flexible way to earn money. You can turn it on and off just like your car. If you have a few spare hours here and there, drive with Uber. Have you ever wanted to be your own boss? I bet you'd make a great boss. Drive with Uber and you are your own boss. If you're driving right now, you should be earning right now. I'd do it. Every day is payday when you drive with Uber, because you can cash out anytime with Instant Pay. With access to Instant Pay, cash out your earnings up to 5 times a day with no minimum amount required. Listen, if you enjoy extra cash, if there's something special you'd like to buy, your car can start making you money. So go ahead, get your side hustle on. Sign up to drive with Uber today. Go to uber.com/drive now. That's uber.com/drive now. uber.com/drive now.
So how about Golden State? Because, you know, I've told you this before, and I've said this on this podcast, on my radio show, in print. my panic level with the Warriors is right around 6 right now. It's higher than most.
Yeah.
Because I keep looking at that front line. And you were out there in Oakland, you know, Golden
San Antonio game. Yeah.
Yeah, San Antonio, but against Oklahoma City, you know,
the first quarter.
They got blown out. But the first quarter, Steven Adams was all over them. Zaza Pachulia had nothing for them there. This is not something that's going to get better. Zaza Pachulia is not this 22-year-old big who's going to improve as time goes on. This is the same guy whose numbers cratered last year in the second half of the season with the Mavericks. David West is 36. JaVale McGee is JaVale McGee.
Exactly.
This is a legitimate concern, I think. And I'm not exactly sure how Golden State can dig themselves out of it unless they plan on scoring 120 every single night.
Well, I mean, the one thing that I think, you know, their big man position is going to be a problem all year. I mean, you can – and the fact that now, you know, if there was time we were ready to bury centers, now this seems like we're starting to get
a golden age, a great crop
coming up now where they're going to have problems, you know, facing teams that have really quality bigs. But I think the one thing that they can counter, like you said, they got to score a lot. If you look at the games that they lost, they didn't shoot the ball well. Mm-hmm. And they're not hitting the threes the way they used to. And I don't know what the reason for that is. And I think that if they play well and they shoot the ball well and they struggle, then I think you can raise the panic level. But if you look at the games that they've lost, they didn't shoot the ball well, they didn't play well, and that's something where you can say, okay, you can kind of overlook, because you figure you're with Steph, Clay, Durant, you know, those shooters, they'll be able to put up points. But the other issue that concerns me is their bench, and you know, the fact that, you know, they got really 4 great all-star players, you know, up front, and that's, I mean, no team in the league would love to have those problems,
right?
But I think once you get past that, you're depending on, you know, older veterans and Iguodala and Livingston, and then younger guys who've never done anything in the league. You know, you got Ian Clark, who's been, you know, who can do some things. But after that, you got Patrick McCall, who's a rookie, who I think everybody's high on, but he's still a rookie. You got Kevin Looney, who is essentially a rookie because he didn't play at all last year. So you got all these young guys, too, thrown in there. And so you don't have anything really established coming off the bench, whereas last year, like, you knew what you were going to get. You throw out Mo Spades, you throw out, you know, Barbosa. You just had just a machine kind of coming off the bench that saved him a lot of situations, that won a lot of games for him, that made it easy for Steph and Clay and Draymond to sit the whole fourth quarter and not have to worry about coming back in the game. Now I don't know if they'll be able to do that much. And you see right now Steve Kerr staggering, you know, his lineups. He's got, you know, Draymond and Steph in the first quarters. He's got Clay and, you know, KD starting the second quarter. So there are things that he's trying to do to try to help raise up the play of the bench. But in a lot of ways, I think it's sort of affecting the overall chemistry of that front four, because those four guys are going to have to be the ones that close games. And they haven't played a close game yet, really. And eventually they will play a close game when those guys are going to have to get used to being on the floor with each other. And I think that those are things that you're going to have to worry about. But I think if they shoot well, if Clay, Steph, and those guys shoot the ball well and they still lose, then I'll start panicking. But the games that they've lost, they've really had some abysmal shooting performances, which I don't think you can necessarily bank on, considering who these guys are and what they did last year. But you're right. The problems up front with Zaza and the guys you mentioned, I don't know if that'll be addressed or how do you address that, because this is the team they have, and they'll just have to find other ways, because they don't have Bogut anymore.
I mean, you
they
look at their peers. Like, you look at the teams they're going to be competing against in the West, and the common thread is that they all have size. Like, the Clippers, big team. Spurs, big team. Even the Jazz, big team. They face the Thunder in a playoff series. Steven Adams, he stays out of foul trouble. He's going to be a problem for them.
Big problem.
In the postseason. But you're right about the shooting. They can shoot their way out of, strangely, a lot of defensive issues if they start, you know, making shots consistently. But the guy... One guy you mentioned was Klay Thompson, not off to the best start this season shooting the ball, getting good looks
incredible
at the rim,
looks.
But they're just not going down. What do you make of what you've seen from him?
Yeah, the one thing about him, and I wonder, you know, if, you know, these long seasons in the Olympics just finally catching up to him. I mean, you it happens to the best of any player. You know, they had a long run in 2015 to win a championship. They come right back, and they put the pedal to the metal. Like, usually you win a championship, you feel good about yourself, you try to ease through a season. The Warriors did just the opposite. They just went just full blown, like we're going 180 down the freeway for a whole season. And then they got to the playoffs, and then they were just burned out by the end of the season. They couldn't hold on to 3-1 lead. Then you go right from that, and a month later, you're training for the Olympics, and then you go out and you play in Brazil. So I just think that he's played a lot of basketball over the last 2.5 years, and, you know, he just never had any chance to rest and just sort of just take it in. Steph, you know, took the summer off. You know, he rested. Draymond doesn't – not really – his game is not really going to require him to be a shooter or whatever, and he didn't play as much as Klay did in the Olympics. So I just think that, you know, after a while – it kind of just wears on you, and I think he's a little, probably a little run down, you know, and I don't know if he'll be able to catch his rhythm later. Maybe he should be able to, but I just think that right now he might just be a little tired.
And you were there, too. That Olympics, it wasn't – they weren't on cruise control there. I mean, they had some difficult games where Klay Thompson had to play minutes, make shots. You know, it wasn't just let's scrimmage – you know, and have some fun.
Exactly.
Out there. They were under a lot of pressure, and that, I think, saps your energy even more.
It does. And, you know, mentally, too, because it's not just that you had to play hard to win these close games. You also had to make sure you fended off, you know, losing and having to deal with that ridicule for an entire summer of being a team, you know, that didn't win a gold medal. And for, like, the Warriors, it would have been worse because, like, wow, you threw a 3-1 lead and you lost in the Olympics. So, I think mentally that stuff probably played a factor in just how hard they had to go at all times. And I think now, you know, that I just think it's really caught up with Klay. And, you know, you figure he's so talented. He's got such great form. Eventually the shots will start falling. But I think that's what I would attribute to the early struggles for him.
Too. All right. Let's talk about a team that beat the Warriors one of these stretches, the Lakers. I mean, you know, look, the Lakers will come back down to earth. Like, they're still too young and they don't have great depth. So they'll wind up losing more than they win. But early returns on Luke Walton as a coach, excellent so far. Man. I mean, he really has these guys, you know, they're confident. Maybe D'Angelo Russell would have developed in the second season anyway, but he looks like a different player. When you watch the Lakers early on, what have you seen?
I've seen a team, like you said, that's playing with confidence. I think Luke, you know, he just has a way with guys. I mean, you know, you saw it last year when they got off to that great start, when, you know, winning the first 24 games. You know, he's just a unique guy in that he grew up around basketball. His father played. He knows exactly what requires, you know, what's required of an NBA player. You know, he played in the league. You know, he's coached with the greatest coaches. You know, he's been with Phil Jackson. You know, he just has a knack for this. Like, and he just is able to just encourage guys and keep them motivated. So I'm just thoroughly impressed by what he's able to do, and just like this coolness about him. Like, it doesn't sound like anything bothers him. Like, whether they win or lose, he's had the same demeanor in post-game press conference. He doesn't like he's panicked. He doesn't like he's ever rattled. And that's the kind of personality, I think, that for young guys, like, you're going to really respond to that, because it's like, well, if he's under control and he's cool, I'm cool. And you can see the game that they won required a lot of discipline at late in games, a lot of composure. And these guys have it. And I think it's really been a reflection of him, in that, you know, they look at him and he's just telling them what to do. They go out there and execute, and they're hitting big shots. The guy that's been kind of really impressive to me so far has been Julius Randle. Because, you know, you got to remember, he had his rookie year, broken leg, and then last year he started to come on, but you didn't really know what he could do. But now you could just see the way he's playing. He's playing like somebody who was that guy who was the top recruit coming to Kentucky. You know, you can see that confidence that he's playing with now, and he's a big key. But it's not even just they have the talent, they have young guys. They have a system. You know, they know what they're doing defensively. They know what they're doing offensively. And Nick Young is back to playing. He's a contributing NBA player again. I think that, you know, under Byron
Scott. I haven't seen that since Washington.
Yeah, after Byron Scott, you just figured that Nick was done. But, you know, hey, he moved on from Iggy, and he removed Swaggy. Now he's Uncle P. I mean, now Nick is playing now. So, but I think all of that's just due to Luke and just the way he carries himself. And you can just see that cool kind of laid-back attitude. It's sort of just, everyone says, oh, that's just the Warriors. That's that Warrior system he's bringing. That's just Luke. I mean, that's the way he always was as a player. That's the way, you know, that's the way he just is. You know, he's just a cool dude that people like being around, and I think that it's coming through in his coaching.
Mike, hang on for just 1 second, because I've got to tell my listeners about Cricket Shirts, my new favorite brand of polo shirts. They are the perfect mix of old-school style and modern design. They're inspired by the natty duds of years past by the likes of guys like Nicholas, Palmer, JFK, and Dean. They're a better fabric. It's a super... They're a better fabric, a super soft, 100% certified organic cotton that makes their shirts as comfortable at the 19th hole as they are on the 18th. They're a better fit. They're not too baggy. They're not too skinny. There's no hassle. There's free returns, and there's free exchanges. I've got a couple of shirts. I wear them all the time on the golf course. They are the best polos that I own by far. I hate that old bacon collar. They did too, so they fixed it for me with their removable collar stays. Now, here's how you get them. For 20% off your first purchase, visit cricketshirts.com/Mannix and enter the promo code Mannix at checkout. That's cricketshirts.com/Mannix, the promo code Mannix at checkout. Get your first purchase 20% off. It is a great deal for a great shirt. Get out there and get it today.
It's the MMQB podcast with Peter King.
Does Cam Newton have a point?
No, he's not being officiated any differently. When you look at the numbers from 2013 until this week, Cam has drawn 9 roughness calls, and that is in the upper tier of calls amongst the league in that same time period.
The MMQB podcast with Peter King. Subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The last couple of years in LA, I mean, we watched Kobe deteriorate. Last year was basically just the Kobe show.
Yeah.
Not worried about wins and losses. Frankly, not worried enough, in my opinion, about player development there. But as ugly as that was, the Lakers find themselves, I think, in a pretty good place here as a rebuilding team. You've got a young coach who's going to be presumably your coach for a very long time, clearly has the skill set for it. You've got a roster that in 2 years could really be a threatening roster, with assuming Brandon Ingram develops the way many think he's going to develop. Our colleague Woj wrote recently that, you know, maybe not the summer of 2017 is when the Lakers start getting free agents, but when you look ahead to 2018, when Russell Westbrook could be a free agent, when Paul George could be a free agent, if these guys keep growing and keep developing, they're going to be in play. All of a sudden, L.A. becomes appealing again, because it's never about the market. It's not about the market anymore. I mean, that's why New York can't get free agents anymore. It's all about the type of team you have and your prospects for the future. And in 2 years, with these guys, this core, the Lakers are going to have a really good chance to lure somebody big there.
Yeah, they'll be able to lure somebody. And, you know, depending on what happens, they'll also have the assets to trade for somebody.
Yeah.
If, you know, somebody's available and they just, you know, some team feels like they're going to lose their guy. And it's like, well, let's just see what the Lakers have now. You know, so they have a bright future. And
I just hope they don't go crazy, though. Like, don't, like, accept that you're rebuilding for a couple of years. Don't be like, wow, we've got 35 wins now. Let's go trade Brandon Ingram for, you know, I mean,
anybody.
Just grow this team. Accept under 500 records. Accept what you are. And then come 2018, make your big move.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the one thing that, you know, we've had to be tortured with Laker games on TV the last couple of years, as bad as they've been. But I think it's fun to see, like, the upstart Lakers. You know, we're so used to seeing they're already a ready-made championship contender. You know, they have Kareem, and then they get Magic. They have Shaq and get Kobe. They have all these pieces, and then, you know, they're great for all this time. And now it's like, man, they really were awful for a couple of years. So it's good to see, like, this developing and this growing into something, and you can see these guys, like, the fans are getting behind these guys, like, they're their guys, like, it's not like there's anybody else. These are our Lakers. Like, we're gonna see these kids grow up together. And I you know, disclosure here, I used to be a Laker fan, like, when I was younger, like, in high school. And I remember when Magic retired and they had to rebuild, and, like, they had Anthony Peeler and Eddie Jones and, like, Nick Van Exel, and I loved those guys. Like, to me, you know, those teams, like, I love those teams. They weren't the best teams, but they were the teams that I got behind. And I just think that, you know, for these fans coming up with these young guys, they're just starting to find that same connection. Like, I remember chanting Eddie, you know, for Eddie Jones. You know, now they can do the same thing for these young guys because they're theirs. And that's what's going to, you know, allow your fans to really, you know, fall in love with a team and really get behind them. And I think this, it's just a great thing to see the Lakers kind of go through that. And now they have a fun team that you can actually get behind.
I want to ask you about the Pelicans here and the struggles they've had early in the season. Now, Alvin Gentry is probably going to pay the price first, I think, for something like this, because the coach is always the first to go. You can't, I mean, you can't fire the rest of the roster, even though the rest of the roster is
frankly not
very good. But to me, this starts with the front office and the job they've done or haven't done in putting the right pieces around. As we hear the buzzer go off here, we'll cut that part out. This starts with the roster and putting the pieces around Anthony Davis and really the wrong pieces in a lot of cases. Like, they go out and they make a deal and they sign Solomon Hill, a guy that the Pacers gave up on. They give him $50+ million. The Jrue Holiday thing was unexpected, but they don't have any playmaking there. They don't defend well. I mean, Davis is getting cranky. I mean, this was a team, Mike, that a year and a half ago, we're talking about a rising team in the Western Conference, the 8 seed, which we expected to be a top 5 seed last year. Now, injuries were an excuse last season. This year, I look at the roster, and this is just not a very good roster that Dell Demps has assembled.
Yeah, I mean, and nothing against Alvin Gentry. He's a great coach. But I think you got to give Monty Williams a lot of credit for what he did with that team the year that they made it to the playoffs.
And he got run out of town.
Yeah, and he shouldn't have. I think now, you know, people look back and say, man, that guy did a heck of a job. Because if I'm not mistaken, didn't they beat out Oklahoma City for the last playoff spot
the year that KD
Durant
was
broke
out.
His foot. Yeah, I mean, that's even more impressive when you look back at it. And the roster wasn't that much different than it is now. You know, it's just that, you know, sometimes you just got to find the right system and understand your strengths. I think right now they want to play an up-tempo game without the pieces that fit that. I mean, you have a lot of, you know, bigs that can't really run. You don't have any shooting. You don't have any playmaking. And it's just a mess, really. And if I'm at Anthony Davis, I have to be really frustrated. I mean, yeah, he got his money. He got paid. But, you know, he's not going to have any help. And I don't know when he's going to get any help. You know, they traded lottery picks. I mean, you know, they got Jrue Holiday, but no one knew he was going to be damaged goods when they got him. But I just feel bad.
Oh, the Sixers did. They knew. Well,
yeah, the Sixers knew what they were doing right there. But I just think that, you know, when you have, you know, difficult years, you hope you can find players who can come in and contribute. And I don't know what they can do, you know, to get better anytime soon. I mean, I would just kind of clean house.
Health is not
you can't lean on that.
Tyreke Evans, even at his healthiest, Tyreke Evans and Anthony Davis, I never thought fit all that well together. Get a ball dominating kind of swing guard, and Davis, who needs to have the ball in his hands kind of at all times. I think Jrue Holiday would help a lot. You know, when healthy, I'm a big fan of what Jrue Holiday can do, but you're still under 500 at with Jrue Holiday in the mix.
And you're in the West. And, you know, the one thing about, you know, being in the West is, like, after you make the playoffs as an 8 seed, you got to be focused on getting better. You know, you can't get worse. Like, you can't or try to stay where you are. You know, after that playoff run, if you're going to get rid of Monty Williams, you got to make the moves to get that team better. You got to make some trades. You got to, you know, do something to upgrade your roster and not just hope that Anthony Davis is going to solve all your problems. And he's playing like a guy who's trying to solve every problem, trying to score every point, get every rebound, get every assist, get every block shot, get every steal. And he's put up some phenomenal numbers, so I think it's going to be great to see what kind of individual numbers he puts up, but you just hope he'll still be standing by the end of the season. Yeah. But on the backside of that, you really feel bad that they haven't been able to put together a team around a truly special player, you know, who, you know, had a bit of a down year, you know, injury wise, and we forgot how great he is. But this is, I mean, he's still top
put up
five
even last player. Year, like it was like 25, 10, and 2 or some absurd number for the second consecutive year. I mean, the team stunk, and he had some injury issues that plagued him, and that's probably the biggest reason the NBA GMs didn't put him on their, you know, one player I'd like to build around, which I thought was kind of insane with how many, a few votes that he got for that. But he still was putting up numbers last year, and this year with the three-point shot, if he continues to evolve with that, he's still a top 3 or 4 player in the NBA. But you got to be careful with him. You can't keep, you know, ticking him off, and you can't keep putting this type of team around him, or things could sour pretty quickly out there.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like he could be the Kevin Garnett of this generation, where, you know, you have this once-in-a-lifetime type player, this truly special talent, and you just find yourself just constantly stumbling over yourself trying to get the right staff or get the right pieces around him. And you don't want to see his career go to waste to where he's playing, you know, 7-8 years somewhere, and then you're like, gosh, this guy's just not as good as we thought he was. No, he's just as good as we thought, but you have to be around an organization and around a team that's going to help, you know, you get better and surround you with the pieces, and they're really failing down.
No, it's an interesting comparison with Minnesota there, because you're right, the Timberwolves, they always sort of put whether it's one or two guys around Garnett those first 5-6 years. Wally Szczerbiak was on that list, but it was never enough to really develop. It was only that last go around with Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell that they put it together. You don't want to wind up in that boat. And look, you don't like to see anybody get fired from their jobs, but at the same time, to restore confidence and optimism there, I mean, you've given Dell a good stretch of time to put a team together, and you're still stuck with a group that's underachieving and doesn't look like. I mean, Buddy Hield, I think, could play, but the rest of this core, I mean, it's not very good.
Yeah, because you don't understand, you don't know what they're trying to be. You don't know what kind of team is trying to be.
You thought they were going to try to be up-tempo, but then you put a roster around Davis that doesn't fit.
Yeah, you got Ashik and, you know, Agencia. You got all these guys, and you're like, I don't even know how these pieces fit, you know, with this. And you know, if you have Anthony Davis, why not have him at your five, you know, surround him with, you know, guys who can stretch the floor. I mean, I guess the Rockets sort of raided their shooters and stole them on over. But there's a reason why those guys were eager to try to get out of there too. You know, it's like, this isn't going right. This isn't going well. And you, like I said, you hate to see a talent on the level of Anthony Davis just get wasted like this.
And now a word from Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts out of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/Mannix. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
All right, I got to ask you before we go about Joel Embiid early on. Now, Philadelphia is terrible, as we expected once again.
That's fine.
But if I'm a Sixers fan, I'm still buying tickets to a game just to see this guy play. I mean, exactly. I watched this guy in practice a couple of times, Mike, and he's shooting threes in games, but he's banging threes in practice at like a small forward rate. Yes. Like, he is knocking stuff down. He's got ball handling skills. I mean, I've written a couple of times that I feel like eventually Kristaps Porzingis is going to reinvent the center position in the same way Dirk Nowitzki reinvented power forward. But Joel Embiid can be right up there with him. I mean, you look at the moves he's putting on guys
Olajuwon
off the dribble.
Like moves. Yeah.
And like, he's a great post player. Like, there's very few things that this guy can't do already. We are just reminded a few weeks into the season about why he was going to be the number one pick hands down a couple of years ago before that injury. For a guy that's only played basketball for, what, 6 years? Yeah. I mean, the moves he can do, I'm like bubbling over with enthusiasm about this guy, but he's just so fun to watch. He's incredible.
Did you see that block, that chase down? I mean, it was a goaltend, but the fact that he could even track down LeBron and like do that to him on a fast break, I mean, it speaks just the level of athleticism that's there.
But you were at the Oklahoma City game. He blocked Westbrook. He came from over one side of the paint to the other to block maybe the most explosive guard in the NBA.
Yes.
Like, the recovery time and the speed that he had there as a shot blocker was amazing.
Yeah, and he's a great player. And the other thing about him that I'm excited about, too, he has such a wonderful personality. I mean, you can see it with his Twitter feed, even with his interviews. Like, he's a star. Like, he's a guy that you want to have a franchise built around, because it seems like he enjoys everything that comes with being a basketball player and being a celebrity. And I think that once his minutes get up and like he can start playing, you know, regular minutes, he's going to be a monster. Like I was like, wow. Cause I was at the first game, like you said, against OKC, and there was a sellout crowd. And I don't think they realized who this kid is or how special he is. And they were just blown away by everything he was able to do. And, you know, hasn't played for 2 years. I mean, so he's had a chance to watch and see a lot of these things, you know, unfold with how bad the team is and figure out what kind of player he wants to be and how he's going to be. So he's had some time. So he's got a bit of advantage on other rookies. But that being said, anybody that sees this guy play, he's going to do something at least once a game that's going to make you go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe the 7-footer just did this. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe he's able to get down the court that fast. Or, you know, and he had that one spin move, I think, in the Oklahoma City game where he just, like, backed the guy down and, you know, did the hook shot. I mean, he's got dream Olajuwon moves. He's strong. He's huge. Like, I don't think people know how physically, like, he can hold his own in the post,
yep,
too.
It's, he's not legit,
like,
five.
Yeah, it's not like he's just some, you know, slender guy out there just, you know. No, he's carrying a lot of weight, which is one of the reasons why he's had these kind of foot and back problems is that. But now he looks like he's, you know, he fits in his body now. Like, everything is coming together, and he's going to be a beast. I'm excited because we mentioned Anthony Davis. We got Embiid. We got Karl Anthony Towns. We have Andre Drummond. We have DeMarcus Cousins. We've got on a list of guys 25 and under. There's at least a dozen good NBA centers now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say this again, and I've always been like this. NBA, put the center back on the ballot.
Yeah.
Don't just put the three bigs.
There was like 1 year where it was stupid. Maybe a couple of years where it didn't make any sense. The immortal Jamal McGlory year,
yeah,
where he made it in. But now, you're right. There are too many good centers.
There are a lot of good
for the
ones.
NBA not to jump in on that. I don't know why there isn't more support for putting that
just
that
bring
back
it
on.
Back and just, you know, and just let those guys get their shine.
Nobody wants to see three small forwards starting an all-star game.
I don't want to see it anymore. It's because it's like, who's jumping center? It's like, oh, like, Carmelo's got to jump center again. Like, come on, let's get the guys that are actually showing us that they're very skilled. They're highly skilled, very talented. They need to get a chance to have their talents, you know, put out there on the forefront on a big stage like the All-Star game.
Just back to Philadelphia for a second. If I'm the Sixers this season, the one thing I'm making a point of emphasis is I'm trying to prop up Jahlil Okafor as much as possible. Like, I am,
yes,
trying to inflate his numbers, make him look as best as I possibly can, because I think he's the guy that's got to go. I think,
yeah,
when you look at that sort of front court troika, if you will, I think Nerlens Noel and MB can play alongside each other.
Yeah.
And I think Noel can swap between two positions. Okafor can't. Okafor's
no.
A five. Embiid's a five. You're just not going to get away. We talk about the renaissance of the centers. That's fine. But two centers are not going to play together all that often in the stretch for NBA. So if I'm Philadelphia, you know, I get Okafor healthy. I get him minutes. I start to really force feed him in some ways. So come February, I can make a deal that might get me a two guard
or
might get
guard.
Me a point guard,
yeah,
or somebody in that backcourt that can play, because that's a huge problem, the huge hole. For the last couple of years, been that backcourt.
Yeah, I'm with you totally, because, you know, Okafor is already a poor defender, so he can't play four, and he's a bad defender at the five. So, you know, you have to just deal with him and you as an offensive player, and he's skilled. I mean, he's a very talented offensive player, but he can't play with Embiid, and he couldn't play with Noel. So,
right.
I just think that, you know, if you're Philly, you got to move Okafor, and you got to, you know, like I said, get some wing help, because that's the one area where they're lacking. Because even when you add Ben Simmons and you bring him back, you know, he's a perimeter guy, but he's more of a kind of a playmaker, facilitator type. He's not a shooter, you know, necessarily. So you need to have somebody out there who can hit shots. And they have a great piece in Okafor that I think can help some teams. I mean, I look at a team like Phoenix that has an abundance of guards and could use a low post presence who can score, and I think that he could fit there. You know, mm-hmm, there are a lot of teams that could use him, and I would just, like, any team that's, like, loaded with guards, that Philly needs to be on the phone with them right now to give him a low post presence that could, I mean, you figure in the modern NBA, you know, there might not be as much of a need for a guy who's going to be a back to the basket type scorer, But everybody knows that getting easy buckets is something every team needs. They need somebody who can just get you a quick two and you can move on. And he can do that. And I think he proved that last year, that if they need 2 points, he can get it for them. But he just said he can't do it in Philly anymore because Phoenix makes, is the future.
Phoenix makes a lot of sense for both teams, really. Yeah. You're talking Brandon Knight or Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah.
They're not trading Devin Booker because he's like 18 and a star. He's 20, but he's a kid in a budding star. But they're not going to be able to keep all those. You know, you're not going to pay three guys eventually max level money long term. And they don't, I mean, Alex Len, okay, whatever. But you're not, you bring a young center in Okafor that potentially you can build around. I can see that a deal like that making some sense for both teams.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it'd be best for Okafor too, because I don't think he was necessarily enthusiastic about going there.
No, he was not.
Because, you know,
I think he'd be very enthusiastic about leaving too.
He would. You know, you already had Embiid and Noel there when he got drafted. I'm like, he's probably thinking, well, one of us has got to go. You know, that's got to be the thought process immediately. So everybody knows that one of them has to go. But you're right. If they can give him a chance to, like, just really punish backups, you know, just take over second units and just get his numbers up, you know.
17-8, you know, for into February. It doesn't matter what kind of, you know, it's almost the Blake Bortles numbers for Jahlil Okafor.
They can Michael Carter Williams him, you know, like they just let him just do whatever he wants to get rookie
Michael
of the year.
Williams.
And they were able
What a fall from grace, Michael Carter Williams.
Well,
that was really being propped up. Like that was like, you're on a god awful team, so here are your numbers, and here's how it is. But to be traded for Tony Snell, like you're kind of a year after, you know, this the Bucks, they could have
picked.
The Bucks could have had that Laker pick, that top five pick in exchange for Michael Carter, or instead they wanted Michael Carter Williams in that deal. I mean, to be given up on like a year after that and dump for Tony Snell, who was out of the Bulls rotation, I mean, that's...
Yeah, but it says a lot about how much they're able to showcase their guys.
Yeah.
So there is...
They have a skill there.
They can do that if they want to. So if they want to showcase Jahlil, they can. And it's not, but it wouldn't be a thing where if you trade for him, you're going to get somebody who can't play. He can play. He can't defend yet, and I don't know if he'll get that skill. But, you know, the thing about Okafor that I like is that he's a kid that is used to being the guy, and he would not have a difficult time handling it with a good culture around him. You know, if you have good veterans and guys who can help him, I think he'll be able to thrive. But Philly just hasn't been the right place for him from the beginning anyway.
Well, Mike, I know you need to take a nap after your many cross-country trips to get ready for the next one, whoever Golden State plays in that matchup. Our traveling man, Michael Lee, thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you for having me, man. It's good to be back on.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to The Vertical's Michael Lee for stopping by. A reminder that you can download this podcast and other archive podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, really anywhere you can download podcasts. If you like it, post a comment, give us a rating. You know I appreciate it. While you're there, check out The Vertical Podcast with JJ Redick and The Vertical Podcast with Woj. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.